But first, let's get back to that Supreme Court ruling with activist and attorney Jay Michelson, who is heading off on a well-deserved family vacation and the moment we finish this interview. Jay, thanks for taking the time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure.
Is it overdramatic to call this week's ruling shocking?
No, it's descriptive. One of my careers is watching the Supreme Court and focusing on LGBTQ issues as well as issues of religion, and I was personally shocked. I remember hearing this argument that anti-LGBT discrimination was a form of sex discrimination just out of law school. So, you know, that was like 25 years ago, and it was some crazy idea that people had that, that you were discriminating against someone based on their sex. If you were tolerating a behavior from one person, from a woman, let's say, that you wouldn't tolerate from a man. That made sense on paper, but I did not think that this sort of textualist, literalist, and conservative court would buy it, and yet they did.
Yeah. So what does this 120-page ruling actually mean in very practical terms?
So in practical terms, it is now illegal to fire someone from their job for being LGBTQ, so gay or transgender. That is already the case in about 24 states. Some states protected gay and lesbian folks, some LGBT folks entirely. But most people did not know that it was still legal in over half of states to fire someone simply for being gay. And it is now illegal, according to the Supreme Court.
Jay, where else will this precedent help LGBTQI plus persons find more protections and dignity?
So the main argument that the Trump administration has been making for the last several years, particularly on trans people, is that there's just no such thing as trans people. And, you know, it's interesting, again, working at the intersection of religion and politics, because if you just talk to trans people, you know, you get to understand who they are. You get to understand their journey. Same if you talk to gay or lesbian people. It's just part of what we do as we grow up as human beings. We learn about things which maybe we didn't know about when we were younger, and we talk to people. The Trump administration has plugged up its ears and has said that there's just no such thing as trans. That is clearly no longer tenable in light of the Supreme Court case. Secondly, and maybe a little more specifically, earlier this month, the Trump administration rolled back protections for trans folks when it came to healthcare under the Affordable Care Act. They used the same rationale in doing that the court just rejected, namely that Title IX in that case didn't specifically say transgender people, so therefore it didn't include transgender people. The court, Title VII, which is what this case was about, also doesn't say trans people. But the court said, no, that doesn't, just because it doesn't use the word or doesn't even have, didn't have in mind, maybe people didn't have in mind in 1964, gay or trans folks, applied to gay or trans folks, it's sex discrimination. So the same argument that the Trump administration is using in education and in healthcare and in many other contexts has just been overruled by the court.
What does it mean that Neil Gorsuch authored the decision?
So maybe I'll first say what it doesn't mean. It does not mean that he has somehow suddenly seen the light and he's an LGBT hero. I actually noted in the Daily Beast when the oral arguments happened that Justice Gorsuch was sort of hitting one point over and over again, which was eventually the point that decided the case for him. That wasn't sex, somebody's biological sex. Wasn't it playing some role in the hiring and firing decision? You know, so if it's if one woman is attracted to a man, that's okay. But if it's a man attracted to a man, then it's not okay. He kept hitting that point. And I wrote at the time that, you know, maybe he'll end up being persuaded. It would be surprising since he is a social conservative, Trump nominee, very right wing on many other issues, certainly on church state issues. He's very, very far to the right. But the way to understand this is that there are lots of different kinds of conservatives, just as there are many kinds of progressives. So some are ideological conservatives. I'm just going to vote the way that, you know, conservative ideology says. Others are judicial conservatives, like Chief Justice Roberts. And some are textualists, You know, and Justice Gorsuch has written a whole book recently on how you have to interpret laws and the Constitution by the words on the page. Not, and that's different from originalism, which is like, well, what did people think at the time? What did the framers have in mind about the Constitution? All those kinds of questions. If we were to be an originalist about the Civil Rights Act, obviously, no one thought in 1964 that they were protecting transgender people. The word transgender didn't exist in 1964. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the text of the words on the page, as Gorsuch does, it says, and it actually it gets into the details, but it's even broad. It says, on account of sex, like because of sex. It uses, if sex is one of, biological sex is one of many factors that's being used, that's discrimination. And we've seen that in other cases before, but now it's applied here. So it's not actually as much of a head scratcher that Justice Gorsuch wrote this, if you bear in mind his judicial philosophy, which is focusing on the words on the page.
Not surprisingly, a lot of progressives immediately started looking for a trick or a poison pill in the language of this ruling. Is there anything in here like that for us to worry about?
I would say no. I think, first of all, given the year that 2020 has been, we're all a little skeptical of any good news of any kind. I certainly am. You know, a lot of the questioning around gender that's happening now is about sort of distinguishing between sex and gender. Do we even really mean biological sex when we say sex? And this is very much a gender binary type opinion. This is about men and women. That's derived from the language of the Civil Rights Act. It's certainly not it doesn't include everything. It doesn't include every form of, let's say, gender expression. It doesn't include non-binary folks. So to that extent, you know, there are parts of lived experience that this opinion doesn't touch. But no, in terms of your question, is there a catch? Is there a poison pill in here? There really isn't. I think there may have been some value. Most people thought it was all really illegal to fire someone for being gay or trans. There may have been some value in having that public discussion. Maybe this would have been an election issue, for example, had the court gone the other way. But no, there's no catch in this opinion.
Well, let me ask it this way. Is there anything that the court is looking at in the future that could weaken what they have decided in this issue?
A few things could happen. First, Justice Gorsuch authored a strange concurrence. There was a marriage-related case that came up, I think it was about a year ago. And he went out of his way to kind of concur and say, just because gay people have the right to marriage doesn't mean they have every right that comes with marriage. You know, that's a pretty dangerous statement. Yeah. Sure. If it's to say, well, you know, some marriages are more equal than others. We don't really know what a test case around that would look like. So, for example, do same-sex spouses have the same rights to employment health care benefits as opposite-sex spouses do? Mm-hmm. I think most people would say, of course. But that little line that Justice Gorsuch wrote, and that was before Justice Kavanaugh came on the bench, so now there's another social conservative on the bench, that certainly gives one pause. Obviously, I think to your listeners and viewers, Justice Gorsuch is way to the right on religious exemptions. And so there were no issues of religion raised in this case. These were just three cases consolidated into one that the employers were very straightforward. They're like, yeah, we fired this person for being gay. Like, that's not our values. Yeah. Had they asserted any religious claim, I'm guessing actually that Justice Gorsuch would have gone the other way. So it's certainly still that area of religious exemptions is still very much contested, and Justice Gorsuch is very much on the right-wing side of that.
Yeah. Well, obviously, the anti-gay religious right will fundraise the heck out of this decision. But are there ways this will actually help slow the recent momentum of their efforts to institutionalize bigotry at every level of our government and society?
I think this is a real rebuke. Yeah, this is also, you know, by the time folks are hearing this, this also comes in the context of the DACA case. You know, these are signature initiatives of the Trump administration, rolling back LGBTQ equality for the sort of right-wing evangelical base, stopping so-called illegal immigration for the populist base. These are pretty remarkable judicial rebukes of the Trump administration. You know, obviously, the presidential polling being where it is, we may be in the last months of this administration. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some kind of last-ditch Hail Mary efforts to kind of, you know, get more in at the door. But no, absolutely, there's no way that this can be construed as anything but a huge setback for those anti-LGBTQ efforts. If we really understand sexual orientation and gender identity as real things, and they're fit within existing understandings of discrimination law, which is what Title VII is all about, this is a huge setback to all of those efforts. And I don't know, other than what you just said, other than fundraising, I don't see any silver lining on this for the hard right.
Is there anything else about this decision that our listeners should know that we haven't talked about?
I think it's worth noting that it was not just 5-4, that it was 6-3, that Chief Justice Roberts also joined in the majority opinion. It's always a fun game to try to guess, you know, what's the backroom deals that are happening in the Supreme Court, why somebody writes one thing and somebody writes somebody else. You know, had this been authored by one of the more liberal justices, it probably would have been a more far-reaching opinion. That being said, you know, the fact that it was Justice Gorsuch, you know, Justice Gorsuch clearly and the Chief Justice were the swing votes in this case. Chief Justice Roberts has other stuff on his plate. He wrote the DACA opinion. He may well be writing the opinion about Trump's financial records. There's a lot of other big cases left in these last 2 weeks of the court's term. So he's got a lot of homework, and he was busy presiding over an impeachment trial. We may have forgotten about that in February. So he's been a little busy. But I think it is interesting that Justice Gorsuch wrote this opinion. And it is true that, look, he gives with one hand and takes away with the other. All any of these employers would have had to do was say, we are a privately held company and we have a sincere religious belief. And that's why we made this decision. And that probably would have been affirmed. And I'm sure we'll see more of those cases in the near future.
What should the rest of us be watching for in the remaining weeks of this Supreme Court term? And I wish you would work in there something about the Chief Justice and his role in this as well.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, the subsequent case on DACA, a gigantic setback for the Trump administration, and also significant because it was not the court saying that DACA is a good thing. This is the law that protects 700,000 people who were brought here to the United States without documentation as children. They're called dreamers. The court is not sort of saying this is a great idea, you know, or a terrible idea for that matter. This is the court saying that, you know, the Trump administration didn't respect the rule of law. They didn't do this the proper way. The major cases ahead, there's a major abortion case that the court took, even though it's very similar to a decision of theirs from just a couple of years ago. That actually makes that decision more fragile because it has less power as a precedent, the way that the court thinks about it. The cases on Trump's financial records are major cases. And for the election, there's a couple of major cases about the Electoral College. And how states can or cannot regulate the Electoral College. So, you know, they do save the best for last. And lest you think that I'm really going to be on vacation, I will be on SCOTUS blog on Monday morning, just still following along from the beach.
A lot of people, I guess, have got their hopes up because of this decision. And I understand that. We have a right to be proud of that. But does that say anything about what may be coming in these other decisions that you just mentioned?
I hesitate to speculate in that way. I think it's, you know, unless you've got a secret listening device in the court's conference room, which now doesn't exist. Now it's a Zoom conference room. So I guess maybe we could hack into the Zoom conference, but there's no way to know that, oh, are they putting this thing out, you know, to go this way, and then they're going to go this other way. And people write those kinds of opinion pieces and post on social media that way all the time. Like, oh, well, you know, he's given us good stuff first, and then he's going to hit us with the bad stuff later. I don't, you know, there's just no evidence for that in past practice, and there's certainly no direct evidence that that's the case. Yeah. It's interesting, I think, to contrast Justice Gorsuch, Chief Justice Roberts on the one hand, and Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Alito on the other. You know, Justice Kavanaugh has just come out on the right-wing side politically of every issue that he's faced. He is really delivering. You know, even at Justice Gorsuch's confirmation hearings, he was always a little bit quirky. He's kind of funny in his courtroom demeanor. He's folksy and tells stories and stuff like that. And he's always seemed like he's not as predictable, let's say, as Justice Kavanaugh. You know, Justice Kavanaugh is delivering. He's delivering exactly what he was put up to do. And in this, and look, Justice Gorsuch does also in many cases. Just in this one, you know, they got a textualist who read the words on the page. But I appreciate that you're trying to be more pessimistic than I am, because I'm usually the pessimist in the room. but this is actually a bit of good news. And it's not just this in isolation. Obviously, you know, we're speaking in the context of a remarkable somewhat awakening of a lot of folks to racial injustice and inequality in our country. Just a few blocks from where I'm sitting right here in Brooklyn, 15,000 people attended a rally for Black Transgender Lives, a Black Trans Lives Matter rally. Two trans women of color, both African-American, were both murdered within the last 3 weeks. That unspeakable violence is continuing, not in police violence, but just were murdered in hate crimes. And, you know, there is a moment now where some of the intersections between these struggles are being seen. And that's how I hope some of these cases can really be incorporated. Not that it's some other thing that's happening while the racial justice movement is happening, but that these are connected and that they overlap. And certainly immigration status and Black Lives Matter have a lot of intersections and a lot of overlaps. And it's certainly the same folks who are on, let's call it, the other side of the issue, if we want to put it that way. And I think there is a possibility for a little bit of hope, even in these challenging times.
One last question. You know, Jay, again and again throughout this administration, we've seen how any conservative, no matter how prominent or how respected, military or civilian, who shows any disloyalty to Trump is instantly branded a political hack, a traitor, a rhino, and worse. For elected officials, there's the threat of primary challenges for war heroes. It's the loss of respect and legacy. But this is different. Has the lifetime appointment of young justices just backfired in a spectacular way?
I think it's too soon to say. I think, you know, look, even if we go to the paragon example of that, which is Justice Kennedy, who wrote all of the major LGBT cases until this one, he was still solidly conservative on a number of issues. So it's not as simple as backfire, as back and forth, because there are always, you know, 20 or so different issues that are happening. So people are cheering Chief Justice Roberts for saving the DACA program. But the same Chief Justice Roberts allowed all kinds of gerrymandering and voter suppression techniques. People cheer Justice Roberts when he stopped the citizenship question from being on the census or saving the Affordable Care Act. But the same Chief Justice Roberts upheld the so-called travel ban, the Muslim ban from the Trump administration. So I think it's more a question of partial success or partial victory. You know, Justice Gorsuch, again, as we've noted, he has come out on very, very far to the right, certainly on religion issues, farther than anyone else on the court, even Justice Thomas. So in those questions, he's absolutely fulfilling the hopes, let's say, of the Federalist Society and others who promoted his nomination. Certainly he's not Justice Merrick Garland, whose seat he's occupying in a lot of our minds, who would have, you know, been much more solid in the center, at the very least, center left. We'll never really know on a lot of those issues. So I don't think it's backfiring. I think it's certainly a setback and a surprise to a lot of folks. But you know, there are different kinds of conservatives. And just because Justice Gorsuch is conservative, socially conservative in some areas, he might not be in others. And even in the immigration case, even in the DACA case now, the dissents, which were, except for the dissent by Justice Thomas, you know, there were the dissent by Justice Kavanaugh recognized that this is a tough political issue, that there are opinions on lots of sides of it. So it's never quite as stark as backward and forward as we sometimes make it. And I'm sure by the time people are even listening to this, there'll be some bad news for progressives. Sure. The Supreme Court gives and takes away.
Dr. Jay Michelson is a rabbi and meditation teacher, as well as an attorney, an activist, and an author. He ably covers the U.S. Supreme Court for the Daily Beast, and his latest book is titled Enlightenment by Trial and Error, 10 Years on the Slippery Slopes of Jewish Spirituality, Postmodern Buddhism, and Other Mystical Heresies. Jay, have a good vacation, and thank you for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, and let's keep fighting this fight.